bitch and sing along. Yeah. Rapping so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap song.
Morning. So yeah, as we were just saying, both you guys just made really good points. The group, you really just kind of brought home one of the biggest things that I think people of color feel as far as the dividing line between law enforcement and people of color. When do blue lives hold themselves accountable, right? Part of the reason you see black, part of the reason there is a Black Lives Matter is because there's a sense among people of color, of the communities at large, that blue lives are not being held accountable and they're not holding themselves accountable. And that's kind of the thing. Like, clearly that's wrong. And no, that's just normal policing. And Big Brother H, you know, you then followed up saying that, hey, you know, these guys are leaving their precinct and they're going out into the world and they want to make sure they go back to the precinct. So how do we resolve those two issues? Because we have Dante Wright, who through a series of events was killed by a taser, and it wasn't a taser, but you know my point. All the training, all the preparation, everything that led up to that moment, taser, but it wasn't a taser, it was a gun. And he's dead, and there's nothing that's going to undo that. So where do we reconcile those two things? The fact that blue lives do not seem to be holding themselves accountable, and what can people do with that?
Well, if I could jump in, I will say that, and look at using that same example, where is that officer right now?
She's in jail.
Okay. So we have a situation in which there was no ifs, ands, or buts, basically. They found her behind up in jail. So here's my thing. We talk about training and everything else, but at the end of the day, it still boils down to the individual. I honestly don't think, with everything going on, I think she plain lost her mind. And I think that does supersede training, right? If you're in a if you're in a combat situation, there's no telling how I will react compared to how you would react, Rupert, or you would react, Sean. There's a difference. We could all undergo the same training and react differently when the situation is presented. I think she was uncontrollably nervous. I think that she knew she had a body cam on. I think that she knew that this footage would be seen.
Right.
And I think she was fearful of the outcome because it's recorded. Oh, shit.
Right.
You know, her reaction.
Right. All right. To jump in right there, a couple points you made that have to be just addressed, right? We're living in a post George Floyd world, right? So you're right. The tensions are out there. So do we believe that the same result would have happened as fast with her had this been prior to George Floyd? That's just number one. Because again, that goes back to what Big Group just said. Many of us are looking for blue lives to hold themselves accountable. Right? Because we don't know what it is. We don't put on the badge. We don't put on the gun. So we know you're going out into a war zone, right? But when you do the wrong thing and those around you see the wrong thing is done and you're saying, oh, nothing to see here, that's when you get people in the street saying, what do you mean nothing to see here? We all saw it. Like Big Rube always says, we're not seeing that there's something to see here. And you're literally looking at us with the evidence in front of us telling us there's nothing to see here. So you're not holding yourselves accountable. So now blue lives is now being met with black lives. Because you're not holding yourselves accountable. If every time something goes wrong, for the most part, that's seen, and you guys are being held accountable, you are going to jail, right? Why was there a conversation with Amber Geiger? How do you shoot somebody in the wrong apartment? What conversation is there? It doesn't matter if you're a police officer or not. You don't know where you live. You can't find your own house. It is what it is. So every time that we see these things not being met reasonably, in the closing of the Chauvin trial, the defense attorney talked about a reasonable officer. And that might have had some weight if he didn't show the pictures of what actually happened, where everything that Derrick Chauvin did was unreasonable. That wasn't reasonable. That was as unreasonable as it can be. So I think to Big Ruth's point, you can speak to it better than I can. When do you hold yourselves accountable so other people don't have to step in to try to hold you accountable?
I'll let Ruth. Well, I think that basically they don't hold themselves accountable, be it Eric Garner, be it Chauvin, Philando Castillo, they never seem to think that they did anything wrong. And I think that's a problem that civilians like myself have. It's one thing if everybody's condemning it. Oh, my God, this is horrible. It's a mistake. This person went above and beyond what they should have done as an officer, and they have to be punished. But then you never hear that from law enforcement. It's always the training kicked in, and this is what happened, and there's nothing to see. So that's what makes a civilian like me very upset.
Well, I will say this. I think that we are generalizing, okay? And it's a natural reaction. I'm a correction. Give you an example. Real life example. Down the street from my house is a gas station. One night I'm in the gas station. The tanker is pumping some gas, so the pumps were down. So it was a few of us in there. And an individual was in there already when I walked in. And just through the peripheral of my eye, I could tell that this individual was really staring at me, really looking at me. Just so happens I had my uniform pants on. They're very distinctive in the sense that 9 times out of 10, you could tell that that's a law enforcement officer. We typically don't wear the top in the street. Few minutes after waiting, another individual comes in really, really rowdy. And he says, yo, what the fuck is going on? Why is it taking so long? And excuse me for cursing. I could tell when the quiet guy kind of taps him and says, shh, yo, I think that guy is a cop. Okay. So now this second guy, I could tell he's staring at me. And then I hear him say, yo, I think I know him. All this time, I'm still looking straight ahead as though I'm not paying attention to him. Mm-hmm. He turns around and says, yo, Brown. He called me by my last name. That's when I made eye contact with him. Now, the average individual, the average officer like me, I deal with hundreds and thousands of inmates over the course of my a year, over the course of my career. 9 times out of 10, they will recognize me before I recognize them. And he starts talking to me like, hey, man, how's Banks? And how's this? And how's that? And I'm like, yeah, they're all good. Everybody's good. His next words were, yo, Brown, you lucky you're not one of those dirty COs that jumped me and beat me up and blah, 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 blah. And I said to him, I said, well, if you know me, that's not my style. I said, you and I will go in the back and we will shoot that 5 and we will work it out. You're going to hold whatever you get. I'm going to hold whatever I get. It's all gravy. I then proceeded to raise up my shirt and say, well, if there's any other issues we got besides that, this right here is going to solve that if it's anything more than that. Nah, Brown, cool. Now, the reason why I'm telling you that story is because there's a problem that we have, mm-hmm. where we say they. Not every officer stood behind Chauvin and said that what he did was right. Not every officer defended what the officers did to Garner or any of those situations. There are a lot of officers that cringed the same way. Just like all those videos that we started seeing from police officers that said, this is my taser, this is my gun. How could you confuse the two?
Right. But okay. to your point right there, Mr. Brown, to your point, that doesn't happen enough. And I think that was the point that we were saying, right? Because honestly, that doesn't happen nearly enough. And a lot of times, the official stance, right? A lot of times the official stance is that there's an investigation, it was handled, and that's it, right? It's packaged up neat. So again, the lack of blue life accountability has created black life accountability, right? It's really created it. It's really saying, listen, we're saying we matter because you're saying we don't. Now, when we say about the generalizing, you're right about the generalizing, right? But that's the point of stereotypes. You're dealing with people as stereotypes instead of people, right? Every one of us is a person. You're right. There are criminals, and it's a very difficult job. But part of the job is, to your point, because remember, you just gave an example of how you were able to ascertain a potential threat prior to any real verbal communication. And some of that might have been your instincts. We believe some of that is your training. But that is what we're expecting with the badge. We're expecting that okay, you're clocking what's going on, right? So when those of us walking down the street doing nothing get treated the same way, those of us walking down the street doing something. And when you live in quote unquote the hood, you know when you're doing something or nothing. You know where you go when you're doing something or nothing. I advocate for that all the time. When people say stop and frisk is messed up, I say, yeah, but I understand. Oh, what do you mean you understand? I understand that there are people who do the wrong thing. Now, I'm not saying stop and frisk is not abuse, but I'm also not going to say it serves no purpose, right? Now, maybe it's gone. Well, not maybe. It definitely went in a direction where it became abusive, right? But there's a reason why you know what corner to go get what. You understand? And I think your point of a war zone is something we have to really think about in America. Because there's a reason why we don't use the military within our borders. Because our military is very messy and very deadly. And when we say war zone, because like you said, we're literally saying that places where people of color live are war zones. And that opens up the entire area to be treated basically anyway. And we're seeing atrocities. We're not necessarily seeing accountability. And I understand what you're saying. It's very dangerous. But I think when we did the episode on the stereotypes, that's what I was trying to get across. That too many times we're not looking at the world for what it is. We're not looking at the Eric Garner situation for what really happened. We're looking at it through the stereotype. And the reality is there were people defending that officer strangled that man to death. And we saw it. And like, what defense is there? How do you not say, oh, well, that wasn't right? And we know that that wasn't right because look how long eventually it took before, whereas we saw what was happening. So I think that the word war zone, because that's something, if you listen to the last episode, Death by Traffic, that was something we're saying. Do we need to use police officers in every situation that we do use them? We know that we're trying to use mental health officers, if you will, to try to engage in non-threatening situations because not everyone is a threat in that way. And I think the recognition of that, not saying we have the answers, but recognizing that the answer is not always to send in, quote unquote, the military, right? We have to sometimes try diplomacy. We have to sometimes try foreign aid. I'm agreeing with you. The officers, when you send us in, we're going to go in, right? We're the soldiers. So if you send us into a war zone, we're ready to fight. But there's no war zone over there. And I think
I apologize. I agree. But I think what we're looking at across the entire country, we're looking at a small microcosm of situations, although they may be sensationalized, right? So now, to balance, if you can use the word balance, look at how many interactions in potentially dangerous situations that don't go awry by good police officers that use diplomacy and tact and everything. I saw it in the jails myself. I saw officers go to jail themselves because they went too far. It wasn't that the department said they went too far. We have a governing board of civilians that looks at particular uses of force and situations that will make decisions about officers, and that's where we come to the term excessive use of force. So we have situations in which officers, be it that they felt that they were defending themselves, did not sufficiently neutralize the threat until the threat was neutralized. I'm not saying death. I'm saying that the particular individual was hurt to the point where he was incapacitated, that were well within reason of doing it. Because when an inmate is coming at me with a shank or even with his bare fists, I cannot assume that they're coming at me to hurt me. I have to assume that they're coming at me to kill me. That is the perception once you step to that level of aggression. And it then goes back into the stereotype situation. How many of those situations did I talk down an individual? Did I use my interpersonal skills that I not only had going into the job, but was taught to use to de-escalate the situation? And how many times did it not work? Did it straight up not work that I had men bigger than me tell me they don't like me because of the uniform that I had on? I did not arrest them. I am not the police. I used to tell them that in intake all the time. I'm not the police. I did not arrest you. I did not bring you here. You can't. You were brought to my house.
Exactly. And you make a really good point there, right? You're getting the aftermath of what someone else wearing a badge did, right? And like exactly. you said, you're at a place where they're already there, right? But the other parts of the badge are going into the communities, right? And that's why I said we don't use the military in every situation because we know what happens within the military, right? We understand that. So when you have a fire, you don't send in tanks when you have a fire. Why would we send in tanks? And we have to really question now, from a systemic point of view, with systemic racism, other things going on, are we sending tanks into non-combat situations, creating the climate? Same thing we do overseas, where the United States military does create terrorists, right? That's a different conversation. But because we live on a stereotype of we're the good guys and they're bad, so whatever we do is okay, and whatever they do is bad, right? We're never even having an honest conversation about why people are doing what they're doing. And that's part of the stereotype. They're just bad. Yeah, but you just blew up his house, right? Is that so? If you blow up somebody, blows up your house, it's okay? He's wrong for being upset about his family being slaughtered? Oh, he's evil. Because you blew up his family, he's evil? Or you blew up his family? So I'm just saying, you know, as you said, we're trying to use this platform to have honest conversations. You're right. We do see some changes, like some changes of the needle moving. When you say it's a microcosm, I think the data might not fully agree with that because I think that people of color are disproportionately being overly run by the system and the level of accountability is not yet catching up. It's starting to catch up in the sensational cases. And like you said, we're seeing the sensational cases. But I think, Big Rube, you can speak to your point, blue lines accountability means that it's catching up in most cases, right? Because we want most people held accountable for what they do, including officers, right? That's kind of the thing. And I think now that the camera's out there more, we're seeing it more. That's something Big Rube always stresses. Not that it's happening more or less, we're just seeing it a lot more. But the thing is, when we see it, and when our reaction isn't the same as the blue lives reaction, like, that's okay. That's not okay. That's not reasonable. And I think that's what we're looking for, more accountability. So, Big Rube, sorry, I didn't mean to make your point, but definitely a good conversation.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I think this is a great conversation, great information that we're sharing. I love this perspective that Brother H is giving us because I've never worked in law enforcement, so I have no perspective as far as how they perceive threats and how they handle certain situations. So I'm grateful for his input. So, you know, I'm just glad to get that that knowledge that I didn't have before.
Same here. Same here. Definitely. Thank you for sharing. Definitely.
My pleasure. I Rupert and I talk from time to time about different situations and, there's some that I'm like, man, that's crazy. And there's other times where I'm like, well, I don't know. And I will throw in one other thing. I'm like, in 12 years of working in corrections, I've had about maybe 3 inmates that said, yo, Brown, I really did it. I really did what it is they say I did.
Mm.
And I'm throwing that into the whole mix of things because I think that in every situation, be it the sensationalized ones or the ones that are not, I think that you have officers that are on both sides of that spectrum. I think that the system in itself, once it goes to a legal situation, I think that gets very convoluted between the prosecution and the defense and what the facts are one way or the other. And I'm not saying every individual that's on Rikers Island deserves to be there or that they're a bad person. But I'm just saying that, you know, when you deal with tens of thousands of inmates over the course of your career and, you know, and you develop rapports with many of them. And the ones that actually say I did it to you, but would never say it when they're in trial, you know, are very few and far in between. And it just speaks of, yes, it is a very generalized situation. I think that the ones, the blue lives that are not in tune with these complete atrocities and indiscretions, they're suppressed. They may be suppressed, be it through repercussions on their job, because I know what it is to cross the wrong captain, and then all of a sudden I'm working the worst house in the jail every day, and all of a sudden I'm working a double every day. I've seen it. I've lived it. And again, it's not right, but these are situations within the job and within the system that creates a lot of the monsters that we now see out on the streets. It's not enough. I used to be told all the time, you know, by inmates that, you know, correction officers are this and they're bums and they just the police and whatever. And I used to defend it like, yo, bro, like we're not all like that. We're not all like that. And I have, when I worked in special trans, I have transported fellow former officers to facilities outside of Rikers Island because they got into situations. Some were selling drugs. Mm. Some crossed the line and really hurt inmates because they jumped on them 4 or 5 and beat them down and, you know, all of these things. So I can speak from that perspective to say that a lot of times, a great many times, because I've seen more officers get caught in corrections than not, where they paid the piper. They were held accountable. There was no captain saying, oh man, you should have beat the crap out of that inmate. I've never seen that. Mm. Never. In my experience. So I just feel like when I say microcosm, you know, we see those particular cases, but we compare those with the thousands of interactions that police officers have where a black man does not end up getting killed. You know, and we have to keep that in mind when we say they, because there's a lot of good officers, white and black, that are out there just trying to do their job and just get their 8 hours in or their double in and come on home and enjoy life.
Well said, well said. And I could say as a civilian, I root for those guys and girls. And I do. And it's very important that I know anytime I see officers stand around randomly, I usually say good morning or hello, hi. And I used to work security. And I know security, a lot of time you become invisible, right? You literally become part of the furniture. And when somebody says good morning, hello to you, it kind of reminds you that, oh yeah, I am a person, right? And I do exist. And I think that awareness is something I learned to realize, you know, officers stand in the corner, right? They're doing their job, but behind that, they're still a person. So good morning, hey, how you doing? You know, everything good? Have a good one, right? Just to have the understanding. So I think that, thank you for sharing that, because you're right. You know, there are a lot of interactions that don't go the way. We are focusing on the ones that do go a certain way. I think the lack of accountability is a big one, because when you see something egregious and when you look at the data of the system, right? We just started out talking about systemic racism, both for those working in it and for all of us living in it. So we know that it's real. And I think we do feel like deer in the headlights. But you did give us some hope, saying that, you know what? A lot of times things do go the way they're supposed to. So we do try to end with a call to action. You've given us so many jewels. If you listen to the podcast, like I know you do, you know, we always do try to give our listeners a call to action, something they can implement, research, just to move the process forward. Because we're not trying to talk to talk. We're trying to talk to change. So any call to action, anything you just want to put out there just to make the world a little bit better place based on enforcing the law?
Just from the perspective of being a former law enforcement officer, we're not all the same. We're not. And, you know, that whole perspective of treating individuals as individuals and not to prejudge, not to stereotype. You know, there's a lot of individuals, if they just took the time, 2 seconds, to have a conversation, you know, say good morning, say hello, it makes all the difference in the world. And I'll leave it like that. We got to treat human beings as human beings.
Well said, brother. Well said. Well said. That is definitely call to action. Big Rube, you have any call to action? Anything to put out to the listeners enforcing the law?
I mean, it was well said by Brother Brown. I would say basically from my end, see something, say something. And to your point, the officer's there. You can say good morning, good afternoon. Have a good mode of communication with them. Have them feel as though they're part of the community, not just an outsider. You don't have to be their best friend, but you can treat them with some respect. If they're getting more respect in the community, maybe they're going to be able to treat us with more respect.
Well said. Well said. I think my call to action will be just to piggyback on both of you guys and to say again, the word that's been just jumping out a lot is accountability. I think all of us as people just want fairness to be fair, right? Whatever is, is. So I think if we hold ourselves accountable and work to hold each other accountable, right? Not black lives, not blue lives, but just everyone, right? Whatever we do, we should be judged by our actions and treat each other the way we want to be treated. So I think that's why I'll leave it. So Big Brother H, thank you so much for taking this very special day and making it that much more special, right? Because thank you for committing to the podcast, because we definitely needed your insight. This is the topic of the day in our society, and it really is. And thank you for taking this very special day to share with us, because it's a very special day to you, which makes it special to us. Happy birthday again.
Thank you very much, and it is my complete pleasure.
Yes, enjoy the birthday. Don't get into too much trouble.
It's all relative on what that is exactly, but hey.
Oh, but joy, and it's a pleasure having you. Thanks for all the insight.
My pleasure.
And for our listeners, today's episode was enforcing the law. We'll definitely continue the conversation because we're all part of that conversation. And take some of the call to actions to heart, whatever we can do. You know, say hi to an officer, right? The same way a lot of officers will say hello, good morning to you. And let's realize that we are all people and we're all in this world together. And let's just do our part. Let's everybody do our part to just treat each other the way we want to be treated. So I'll just say, again, enforcing the law, I'm Sean P.
I'm Big Root.
And we are the brothers.
Peace out.
What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists are on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.
All right, we're back to recording. So yeah, as we were just saying, both you guys just made really good points. Big Group, you really just kind of brought home one of the biggest things that I think people of color feel as far as the dividing line between law enforcement and people of color. When do blue lives hold themselves accountable, right? Part of the reason you see black, part of the reason there is a Black Lives Matter is because there's a sense among people of color, of the communities at large, that blue lives are not being held accountable and they're not holding themselves accountable. And that's kind of the thing. Like, clearly that's wrong. And no, that's just normal policing. And Big Brother H, you know, you then followed up saying that, hey, you know, these guys are leaving their precinct and they're going out into the world and they want to make sure they go back to the precinct. So how do we resolve those two issues? Because we have Dante Wright, who through a series of events was killed by a taser, and it wasn't a taser, but you know my point. All the training, all the preparation, everything that led up to that moment, taser, but it wasn't a taser, it was a gun. And he's dead, and there's nothing that's going to undo that. So where do we reconcile those two things? The fact that blue lives do not seem to be holding themselves accountable, and what can people do with that?
Well, if I could jump in, I will say that, and look at using that same example, where is that officer right now?
She's in jail.
Okay. So we have a situation in which there was no ifs, ands, or buts, basically. They found her behind up in jail. So here's my thing. We talk about training and everything else, but at the end of the day, it still boils down to the individual. I honestly don't think, with everything going on, I think she plain lost her mind. And I think that does supersede training, right? If you're in a combat situation, there's no telling how I will react compared to how you would react, Rupert, or you would react, Sean. There's a difference. We could all undergo the same training and react differently when the situation is presented. I think she was uncontrollably nervous. I think that she knew she had a body cam on. I think that she knew that this footage would be seen.
Right.
And I think she was fearful of the outcome because it's recorded. Oh shit.
Right.
You know, her reaction.
Right. All right. To jump in right there, a couple points you made that have to be just addressed, right? We're living in a post George Floyd world, right? So you're right. The tensions are out there. So do we believe that the same result would have happened as fast with her had this been prior to George Floyd? That's just number one. Because again, that goes back to what Big Rube just said. Many of us are looking for Bulas to hold themselves accountable, right? Because we don't know what it is. We don't put on the badge. We don't put on the gun. So we know you're going out into a war zone, right? But when you do the wrong thing and those around you see the wrong thing is done and you're saying, oh, nothing to see here. That's when you get people in the street saying, what do you mean nothing to see here? We all saw it. Like Big Rube always says, we're not seeing that there's something to see here. And you're literally looking at us with the evidence in front of us telling us there's nothing to see here. So you're not holding yourselves accountable. So now blue lives is now being met with black lives because you're not holding yourselves accountable. If every time something goes wrong, for the most part, that's seen and you guys are being held accountable, you are going to jail, right? Why was there a conversation with Amber Geiger? How do you shoot somebody in the wrong apartment? What conversation is there? It doesn't matter if you're a police officer or not. You don't know where you live. You can't find your own house. It is what it is. So every time that we see these things not being met reasonably, in the closing of the Chauvin trial, the defense attorney talked about a reasonable officer. And that might have had some weight if he didn't show the pictures of what actually happened, where everything that Derrick Chauvin did was unreasonable. That wasn't reasonable. That was as unreasonable as it can be. So I think to Big Rube's point, you can speak to it better than I can. When do you hold yourselves accountable so other people don't have to step in to try to hold you accountable?
I'll let Rube.
Well, I think that basically they don't hold themselves accountable, be it Eric Garner, be it Chauvin, Philando Castillo. They never seem to think that they did anything wrong. And I think that's a problem that civilians like myself have. It's one thing if everybody's condemning it. Oh, my God, this is horrible. It's a mistake. This person went above and beyond what they should have done as an officer, and they have to be punished. But then you never hear that from law enforcement. It's always the training kicked in, and this is what happened, and there's nothing to see. So that's what makes a civilian like me very upset.
Well, I will say this. I think that we are generalizing, okay, and it's a natural reaction. I'm a correction. Give you an example, real life example. Down the street from my house is a gas station. One night I'm in the gas station. The tanker is pumping some gas, so the pumps were down. So it was a few of us in there, and an individual was in there already when I walked in, and just through the peripheral of my eye, I could tell that this individual was really staring at me, really looking at me. Just so happens I had my uniform pants on. They're very distinctive, in the sense that 9 times out of 10, you could tell that that's a law enforcement officer. We typically don't wear the top in the street. A few minutes after waiting, another individual comes in really, really rowdy. And he says, yo, what the fuck is going on? Why is it taking so long? And excuse me for cursing. I could tell when the quiet guy kind of taps him and says, shh, yo, I think that guy is a cop. Okay. So now the second guy, I could tell he's staring at me. And then I hear him say, yo, I think I know him. All this time, I'm still looking straight ahead as though I'm not paying attention to him. Mm-hmm. He turns around and says, yo, Brown. He called me by my last name. That's when I made eye contact with him. Now, the average individual, the average officer like me, I deal with hundreds and thousands of inmates over the course of my a year. Over the course of my career, nine times out of 10, they will recognize me before I recognize them. Mm. And he starts talking to me like, hey, man, how's Banks and how's this and how's that? And I'm like, yeah, they're all good. Everybody's good. His next words were, yo, Brown, you lucky you're not one of those dirty COs that jumped me and beat me up and blah, 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 blah. And I said to him, I said, well, if you know me, that's not my style. I said, you and I will go in the back and we will shoot that five and we will work it out. You're going to hold whatever you get. I'm going to hold whatever I get. It's all gravy. I then proceeded to raise up my shirt and say, well, if there's any other issues we got besides that, this right here is going to solve that if it's anything more than that. Nah, Brown, cool. Nah. Now, the reason why I'm telling you that story is because there's a problem that we have where we say they. Not every officer stood behind Chauvin and said that what he did was right. Not every officer defended what the officers did to Garner or any of those situations. There are a lot of officers that cringed the same way. Just like all those videos that we started seeing from police officers that said, this is my taser, this is my gun. How could you confuse the two?
Right. But to your point right there, Mr. Brown, to your point, that doesn't happen enough. And I think that was the point of 100%, right? Because honestly, that doesn't happen nearly enough. And a lot of times, the official stance, right? A lot of times the official stance is that there's an investigation, it was handled, and that's it, right? It's packaged underneath. So again, the lack of blue life accountability has created black life accountability, right? It's really created it. It's really saying, listen, we're saying we matter because you're saying we don't. Now, when we say about the generalizing, you're right about the generalizing, right? But that's the point of stereotypes. You're dealing with people as stereotypes instead of people, right? Every one of us is a person. You're right. There are criminals, and it's a very difficult job. But part of the job is, to your point, because remember, you just gave an example of how you were able to ascertain a potential threat prior to any real verbal communication. And some of that might have been your instincts. We believe some of that is your training. But that is what we're expecting with the badge. We're really expecting that, okay, you're clocking what's going on, right? So when those of us walking down the street doing nothing get treated the same way as those of us walking down the street doing something. And when you live in, quote, unquote, the hood, you know when you're doing something or nothing. You know where you go when you're doing something or nothing. I advocate for that all the time. When people say stop and frisk is messed up, I say, yeah, but I understand. Oh, what do you mean you understand? I understand that there are people who do the wrong thing. Now, I'm not saying stop and frisk is not abuse, but I'm also not going to say it serves no purpose, right? Now, maybe it's gone. Well, not maybe. It definitely went in a direction where it became abusive, right? But there's a reason why you know what corner to go get what. You understand? And I think your point of a war zone is something we have to really think about in America. Because there's a reason why we don't use the military within our borders. Because our military is very messy and very deadly. And when we say war zone, because like you said, we're literally saying that places where people of color live are war zones. And that opens up the entire area to be treated basically anyway. And we're seeing atrocities. We're not necessarily seeing accountability. And I understand what you're saying. It's very dangerous. But I think when we did the episode on the stereotypes, that's what I was trying to get across. That too many times we're not looking at the world for what it is. We're not looking at the Eric Garner situation for what really happened. We're looking at it through the stereotype. And the reality is there were people defending that officer strangled that man to death. And we saw it. Like, what defense is there? How do you not say, oh, well, that wasn't right? And we know that that wasn't right because look how long eventually it took before, whereas we saw what was happening. So I think that the word war zone, because that's something, if you listen to the last episode, Death by Traffic, that was something we're saying. Do we need to use police officers in every situation that we do use them? We know that we're trying to use mental health officers, if you will, to try to engage in non-threatening situations because not everyone is a threat in that way. And I think the recognition of that, not saying we have the answers, but recognizing that the answer is not always to send in, quote unquote, the military, right? We have to sometimes try diplomacy. We have to sometimes try foreign aid. I'm agreeing with you, the officers, when you send us in, we're going to go in, right? We're the soldiers. So if you send us into a war zone, we're ready to fight. But there's no war zone over there. And I think that's...
I apologize. I agree. But I think what we're looking at across the entire country, we're looking at a small microcosm of situations, although they may be sensationalized, right? So now, to balance, if you can use the word balance, look at how many interactions in potentially dangerous situations that don't go awry by good police officers that use diplomacy and tact and everything. I saw it in the jails myself. I saw officers go to jail themselves because they went too far. It wasn't that the department said they went too far. We have a governing board of civilians that looks at particular uses of force and situations that will make decisions about officers, and that's where we come to the term excessive use of force. So we have situations in which officers, be it that they felt that they were defending themselves, did not sufficiently neutralize the threat until the threat was neutralized. I'm not saying death. I'm saying that the particular individual was hurt to the point where he was incapacitated, that were well within reason of doing it. Because when an inmate is coming at me with a shank or even with his bare fist, I cannot assume that they're coming at me to hurt me. I have to assume that they're coming at me to kill me. That is the perception once you step to that level of aggression. And it then goes back into the stereotype situation. How many of those situations did I talk down an individual? Did I use my interpersonal skills that I not only had going into the job, but was taught to use to de-escalate the situation? And how many times did it not work? Did it straight up not work that I had men bigger than me tell me they don't like me because of the uniform that I had on? I did not arrest them. I am not the police. I used to tell them that in intake all the time. I'm not the police. I did not arrest you. I did not bring you here. You can't. You were brought to my house.
Exactly. And you make a really good point there, right? You're getting the aftermath of what someone else wearing a badge did, right? And like exactly. You said, you're at a place where they're already there, right? But the other parts of the badge are going into the communities, right? And that's why I said we don't use the military in every situation because we know what happens within the military, right? We understand that. So when you have a fire, you don't send in tanks when you have a fire. Why would we send in tanks? And we have to really question now, from a systemic point of view, with systemic racism, other things going on, are we sending tanks into non-combat situations, creating the climate? Same thing we do overseas, where the United States military does create terrorists, right? That's a different conversation. But because we live in a stereotype of we're the good guys and they're bad, so whatever we do is okay, and whatever they do is bad, right? We're never even having an honest conversation about why people are doing what they're doing. And that's part of the stereotype. They're just bad. Yeah, but you just blew up his house, right? Is that so? If you blow up somebody, blows up your house, it's okay? He's wrong for being upset about his family being slaughtered? Oh, he's evil. Because you blew up his family, he's evil? Or you blew up his family? So I'm just saying, you know, as you said, we're trying to use this platform to have honest conversations. You're right. We do see some changes, like some changes of the needle moving. When you say it's a microcosm, I think the data might not fully agree with that because I think that people of color are disproportionately being overly run by the system and the level of accountability is not yet catching up. It's starting to catch up in the sensational cases. And like you said, we're seeing the sensational cases. But I think, Big Rube, you can speak to your point. Blue lines accountability means that it's catching up in most cases, right? Because we want most people held accountable for what they do, including officers, right? That's kind of the thing. And I think now that the camera's out there more, we're seeing it more. That's something Big Rube always stresses. Not that it's happening more or less. We're just seeing it a lot more. But the thing is, when we see it and when our reaction isn't the same as the blue lines reaction, like, that's okay. That's not okay. That's not reasonable. And I think that's what we're looking for, more accountability. So, Big Rube, sorry, I didn't mean to make your point, but definitely a good conversation.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I think this is a great conversation, great information that we're sharing. I love this perspective that Brother H is giving us because I've never worked in law enforcement, so I have no perspective as far as how they perceive threats and how they handle certain situations. So I'm grateful for his input. So, you know, I'm just glad to get that that knowledge that I didn't have before.
Same here. Same here. Definitely. Thank you for sharing. Definitely.
My pleasure. I Rupert and I talk from time to time about different situations, and there's some that I'm like, man, that's crazy, and there's other times where I'm like, well, I don't know. And I will throw in one other thing. I'm like, in 12 years of working in corrections, I've had about maybe 3 inmates that said, "Yo, Brown, I really did it. I really did what it is they say I did."
Mm.
And I'm throwing that into the whole mix of things, because I think that in every situation, be it the sensationalized ones or the ones that are not, I think that you have officers that are on both sides of that spectrum. I think that the system in itself, once it goes to a legal situation, I think that gets very convoluted between the prosecution and the defense and what the facts are one way or the other. And I'm not saying every individual that's on Rikers Island deserves to be there or that they're a bad person. But I'm just saying that, you know, when you deal with tens of thousands of inmates over the course of your career, and, you know, and you develop rapport with many of them. And the ones that actually say I did it to you, but would never say it when they're in trial, you know, are very few and far in between. And it just speaks of, yes, it is a very generalized situation. I think that the ones, the blue lives that are not in tune with these complete atrocities and indiscretions, they're suppressed. They may be suppressed, be it through repercussions on their job, because I know what it is to cross the wrong captain, and then all of a sudden I'm working the worst house in the jail every day, and all of a sudden I'm working a double every day. I've seen it. I've lived it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not right, but these are situations within the job and within the system that creates a lot of the monsters that we now see out on the streets. It's not enough. I used to be told all the time, you know, by inmates that, you know, correction officers are this and they're bums and they just the police and whatever. And I used to defend it like, yo, bro, like, we're not all like that. We're not all like that. And I have, when I worked in special trans, I have transported fellow former officers to facilities outside of Rikers Island, because they got into situations. Some were selling drugs.
Mm.
Some crossed the line and really hurt inmates because they jumped on them 4 or 5 and beat them down and, you know, all of these things. So I can speak from that perspective to say that a lot of times, they, great many times, because I've seen more officers get caught in corrections than not, where they paid the piper. They were held accountable. There was no captain saying, "Oh man, you should have beat the crap out of that inmate." I've never seen that.
Mm.
Never in my experience. So, I just feel like when I say microcosm, you know, we see those particular cases, but we compare those with the thousands of interactions that police officers have where a black man does not end up getting killed, you know, and we have to keep that in mind when we say they, because there's a lot of good officers, white and black, that are out there just trying to do their job and just get their 8 hours in or their double in and come on home and enjoy life.
Well said, well said. And I can say as a civilian, I root for those guys and girls, and I do. And it's very important that I know every time I see officers stand around randomly, I usually say good morning or hello, hi. And only because I used to work security. And I know security, a lot of time you become invisible, right? You literally become part of the furniture. And when somebody says good morning, hello to you, it kind of reminds you that, oh yeah, I am a person, right? And I do exist. And I think that awareness is something I learned to realize. You know, officers stand in the corner, right? They're doing their job, but behind that, there's still a person. So good morning. Hey, how you doing? You know, everything good? Have a good one, right? Just to have the understanding. So I think that, thank you for sharing that, because you're right. You know, there are a lot of interactions that don't go the way. We are focusing on the ones that do go a certain way. I think the lack of accountability is a big one, because when you see something egregious and when you look at the data of the system, right? We just started out talking about systemic racism, both for those working in it and for all of us living in it. So we know that it's real. And I think we do feel like deer in the headlights. But you did give us some hope, saying that, you know what? A lot of times things do go the way they're supposed to. So we do try to end with a call to action. You've given us so many jewels. If you listen to the podcast, like I know you do, you know, we always do try to give our listeners a call to action, something they can implement, research, just to move the process forward. Because we're not trying to talk to talk. We're trying to talk to change. So any call to action, anything you just want to put out there just to make the world a little bit better place based on enforcing the law?
I you know, just from the perspective of being a former law enforcement officer, we're not all the same. We're not. And, you know, that whole perspective of treating individuals as individuals and not to prejudge, not to stereotype. You know, there's a lot of individuals that they just took the time, 2 seconds, to have a conversation. You know, say good morning, say hello. It makes all the difference in the world. And I'll leave it like that. We got to treat human beings as human beings.
Well said, brother. Well said. Well said. That is definitely call to action. Big Rube, you have any call to action? Anything to put out to the listeners enforcing the law?
I mean, it was well said by Brother Brown. I would say basically from my end, see something, say something. And to your point, the officers there, you can say good morning, good afternoon. Have a good mode of communication with them. Have them feel as though they're part of the community, not just an outsider. You don't have to be their best friend, but you can treat them with some respect. If they're getting more respect in the community, maybe they're going to be able to treat us with more respect.
Well said. Well said. I think my call to action will be just to piggyback on both of you guys and to say again, the word that's been just jumping out a lot is accountability. I think all of us as people just want fairness to be fair, right? Whatever is. So I think if we hold ourselves accountable and work to hold each other accountable, right? Not black lives, not blue lives, but just everyone, right? Whatever we do, we should be judged by our actions and treat each other the way we want to be treated. So I think that's where I'll leave it. So Big Brother H, thank you so much for taking this very special day, making it that much more special, right? Because thank you for committing to the podcast, because we definitely needed your insight. This is the topic of the day in our society, and it really is. And thank you for taking this very special day to share with us, because it's a very special day to you, which makes it special to us. Happy birthday again.
Thank you very much, and it is my complete pleasure.
Yes, enjoy the birthday. Don't get into too much trouble.
It's all relative on what that is exactly, but hey.
Oh, but joy, and it's a pleasure having you. Thanks for all the insight.
My pleasure.
And for our listeners, today's episode was enforcing the law. We'll definitely continue the conversation because we're all part of that conversation. And take some of the call to actions to heart, whatever we can do. You know, say hi to an officer, right? The same way a lot of officers will say hello, good morning to you. And let's realize that we are all people and we're all in this world together. And let's just do our part. Let's everybody do our part to just treat each other the way we want to be treated. So I'll just say, again, enforcing the law, I'm Sean P.
I'm Big Root.
And we are the brothers.
Peace out.
Tired of the same rap songs. Uh-huh. Every new hit should sing along. Yeah. Rap is so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap songs.
I did not arrest them. I am not the police. I used to tell them that in the intake all the time. I'm not the police. I did not arrest you. I did not bring you here. You can't. You were brought to my house.
Exactly. And you make a really good point there, right? You're getting the aftermath of what someone else wearing a badge did, right? And like exactly. You said, you're at a place where they're already there, right? But the other parts of the badge are going into the communities, right? And that's why I said we don't use the military in every situation because we know what happens within the military, right? We understand that. So when you have a fire, you don't send in tanks when you have a fire. Why would we send in tanks? And we have to really question now, from a systemic point of view, with systemic racism, other things going on, are we sending tanks into non-combat situations, creating the climate? Same thing we do overseas, where the United States military does create terrorists, right? That's a different conversation. But because we live in a stereotype of we're the good guys and they're bad, so whatever we do is okay, and whatever they do is bad, right? We're never even having an honest conversation about why people are doing what they're doing. And that's part of the stereotypes. They're just bad. Yeah, but you just blew up his house, right? Is that so? If you blow up somebody, blows up your house, it's okay? He's wrong for being upset about his family being slaughtered? Oh, he's evil. Because you blew up his family, he's evil? Or you blew up his family? So I'm just saying, you know, as you said, we're trying to use this platform to have honest conversations. You're right. We do see some changes, like some changes of the needle moving. When you say it's a microcosm, I think the data might not fully agree with that because I think that people of color are disproportionately being overly run by the system and the level of accountability is not yet catching up. It's starting to catch up in the sensational cases. And like you said, we're seeing the sensational cases. But I think, Big Ruby, you can speak to your point, blue line accountability means that it's catching up in most cases, right? Because we want most people held accountable for what they do, including officers, right? That's kind of the thing. And I think now that the camera's out there more, we're seeing it more. That's something Big Ruby always stresses. Not that it's happening more or less, we're just seeing it a lot more. But the thing is, when we see it, and when our reaction isn't the same as the blue lies reaction, like, that's okay. That's not okay. That's not reasonable. And I think that's what we're looking for, more accountability. So, Big Rube, sorry, I didn't mean to make your point, but definitely a good conversation.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I think this is a great conversation, great information that we're sharing. I love this perspective that Brother H is giving us, because I've never worked in law enforcement, so I have no perspective as far as how they perceive threats and how they handle certain situations. So I'm grateful for his input. So, you know, I'm just glad to get that that knowledge that I didn't have before.
Same here. Same here. Definitely. Thank you for sharing. Definitely.
My pleasure. I Rupert and I talk from time to time about different situations and there's some that I'm like, man, that's crazy. And there's other times where I'm like, well, I don't know. And I will throw in one other thing. I'm like, in 12 years of working in corrections, I've had about maybe 3 inmates that said, yo, Brown, I really did it. I really did what it is they say I did.
Mm.
I'm throwing that into the whole mix of things because I think that in every situation, be it the sensationalized ones or the ones that are not, I think that you have officers that are on both sides of that spectrum. I think that the system in itself, once it goes to a legal situation, I think that gets very convoluted between the prosecution and the defense and what the facts are one way or the other. And I'm not saying every individual that's on Rikers Island deserves to be there or that they're a bad person. But I'm just saying that, you know, when you deal with tens of thousands of inmates over the course of your career and, you know, and you develop rapports with many of them. And the ones that actually say I did it to you, but would never say it when they're in trial, you know, are very few and far in between. And it just speaks of, yes, it is a very generalized situation. I think that the ones, the blue lives that are not in tune with these complete atrocities and indiscretions, they're suppressed. They may be suppressed, be it through repercussions on their job, because I know what it is to cross the wrong captain, and then all of a sudden I'm working the worst house in the jail every day, and all of a sudden I'm working a double every day. I've seen it. I've lived it. And again, it's not right, but these are situations within the job and within the system that creates a lot of the monsters that we now see out on the streets. It's not enough. I used to be told all the time, you know, by inmates that, you know, correction officers are this and they're bums and they just the police and whatever. And I used to defend it like, yo, bro, like, we're not all like that. We're not all like that. And I have, when I worked in special trans, I have transported fellow former officers to facilities outside of Rikers Island because they got into situations. Some were selling drugs. Some crossed the line and really hurt inmates because they jumped on them 4 or 5 and beat them down and, you know, all of these things. So I can speak from that perspective to say that a lot of times, a great many times, because I've seen more officers get caught in corrections than not, where they paid the piper. They were held accountable. There was no captain saying, oh man, you should have beat the crap out of that inmate. I've never seen that. Never in my experience. So I just feel like when I say microcosm, you know, we see those particular cases, but we compare those with the thousands of interactions that police officers have where a black man does not end up getting killed. You know, and we have to keep that in mind when we say they, because there's a lot of good officers, white and black, that are out there just trying to do their job and just get their 8 hours in or their double in and come on home and enjoy life.
Well said, well said. And I can say as a civilian, I root for those guys and girls, and I do. And it's very important that I know anytime I see officers stand around randomly, I usually say good morning or hello, hi. And only because I used to work security. And I know security, a lot of time you become invisible, right? You literally become part of the furniture. And when somebody says good morning, hello to you, it kind of reminds you that, oh yeah, I am a person, right? And I do exist. And I think that awareness is something I learned to realize, you know, officers stand in the corner, right? They're doing their job, but behind that, they're still a person. So good morning. Hey, how you doing? You know, everything good? Have a good one, right? Just to have the understanding. So I think that, thank you for sharing that, because you're right. You know, there are a lot of interactions that don't go the way. We are focusing on the ones that do go a certain way. I think the lack of accountability is a big one, because when you see something egregious and when you look at the data of the system, right? We just started out talking about systemic racism, both for those working in it and for all of us living in it. So we know that it's real. And I think we do feel like deer in the headlights. But you did give us some hope, saying that, you know what, a lot of times things do go the way they're supposed to. So we do try to end with a call to action. You've given us so many jewels. If you listen to the podcast, like I know you do, you know, we always do try to give our listeners a call to action, something they can implement, research, just to move the process forward. Because we're not trying to talk to talk. We're trying to talk to change. So any call to action, anything you just want to put out there just to make the world a little bit better place based on enforcing the law?
I just from the perspective of being a former law enforcement officer, we're not all the same. We're not. And, you know, that whole perspective of treating individuals as individuals and not to prejudge, not to stereotype. You know, there's a lot of individuals that they just took the time, 2 seconds, to have a conversation, you know, say good morning, say hello. It makes all the difference in the world. And I'll leave it like that. We got to treat human beings as human beings.
Well said, brother. Well said. Well said. That is definitely call to action. Big Roop, you have any call to action? Anything to put out to the listeners enforcing the law?
As well said by Brother Brown, I would say basically from my end, see something, say something. And to your point, the officer's there. You can say good morning, good afternoon. Have a good mode of communication with them. Have them feel as though they're part of the community, not just an outsider. You don't have to be their best friend, but you can treat them with some respect. If they're getting more respect in the community, maybe they're going to be able to treat us with more respect.
Well said. Well said. I think my call to action will be just to piggyback on both of you guys and to say again, the word that's been just jumping out a lot is accountability. I think all of us as people just want fairness to be fair, right? Whatever is, is. So I think if we hold ourselves accountable and work to hold each other accountable, right? Not black lives, not blue lives, but just everyone, right? Whatever we do, we should be judged by our actions and treat each other the way we want to be treated. So I think that's where I'll leave it. So Big Brother H, thank you so much for taking this very special day, making it that much more special, right? Because thank you for committing to the podcast, because we definitely needed your insight. This is the topic of the day in our society, and it really is. And thank you for taking this very special day to share with us, because it's a very special day to you, which makes it special to us. Happy birthday again.
Thank you very much, and it is my complete pleasure.
Yes, definitely. Enjoy the birthday. Don't get into too much trouble.
It's all relative on what that is exactly, but hey.
Oh, but joy, and it's a pleasure having you. Thanks for all the insight.
My pleasure.
And for our listeners, today's episode was enforcing the law. We'll definitely continue the conversation because we're all part of that conversation. And take some of the call to actions to heart, whatever we can do. You know, say hi to an officer, right? The same way a lot of officers will say hello, good morning to you. And let's realize that we are all people and we're all in this world together. And let's just do our part. Let's everybody do our part to just treat each other the way we want to be treated. So I'll just say, again, enforcing the law, I'm Sean P.
I'm Big Root.
And we are the brothers.
Peace out.
I'm tired of the same rap songs, every new hit, sing along. Rap is so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. It's like they took the art out the art form. What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to, I demand it. All the real artists on another planet, and me, I'm the last MC still standing.